Iran is capable of closing the Gulf. It is capable of taking the world's reserve tanks out. Iran is not the Iran of 1979 or even the Iran of 1988. We have not caught up with those facts. We continue to talk down to the Iranians, which is absolutely the worst thing you can do.
I want to talk in some detail about Iraq and the impact of the Iraq war on relations with Iran. But before we get there, let's just stick with the immediate problem the U.S. is wrestling with, and that is how to get the Iranians to stop their uranium enrichment program. Does Washington really believe diplomacy can work?
It does now because there's not an option.
Well, it really believes it. It may be pursuing something it doesn't believe will work.
It would prefer to attack Iran. It would prefer to take out the nuclear facilities if it could. It would prefer to cause a revolution in Iran. There is a belief in the United States, in the State Department, that Iran is on the verge of some sort of revolution, almost secular revolution. It's not true, but that is the working assumption in Washington.
But when Mr. Bush authorizes a senior State Department official, William Burns, to go to Geneva and actually participate in, albeit, quote-unquote, as an observer, but to be there with senior Iranian negotiators talking about the complexities, the detail of Iran's nuclear program, does that send a signal that something has fundamentally shifted in the last few weeks and months?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think we're recognizing at this point what Iran is. That Iran does have us blackmailed with oil. It does have us blackmailed in the Gulf, and there's not much we can do except talk. We cannot attack Iran as a rational policy decision. The Iranians will take out the oil in the Gulf. It will kick America into a depression at $12 a gallon.
When you say we, the United States, cannot attack Iran, does that mean that you, for one, as a former CIA agent, believe that Iran, in the end, has to be allowed to acquire the nuclear technology that will allow it to build a bomb?
I think Iran's power is such that it's going to build a nuclear bomb at a later date. A nuclear bomb is simply a way to get attention. It seems like a bit of a devious policy.
Well, it's not simply a way to get attention. It's a device which can kill hundreds of thousands of people.
But they're not making one. There's no evidence of it.
All the evidence suggests that they might be, within 18 months to 3 years, in a position to make a nuclear device if they continue down the track they are currently on.
I'm not so sure about that. Since 1980, I've been reading national intelligence estimates. Every one of them said in 4 years Iran will have a nuclear bomb. 1980, 1984, 1988, and so on. It's something that they've been teasing us with for a long time. The Iranians' military in itself does not need a nuclear bomb now, maybe later, 10 years from now. They simply, after the United States, are the most important power in the Gulf. They have surrogates in Lebanon, which effectively control the government. Syria is an alliance with Iran that it cannot break. Iran is the victor, especially after the Iraq war.
All of those things I want to talk about, they're all important. Doubtless, Iran's power in the region is important, whether or not it has the bomb. But I want to stick to the bomb for the time being, because the fact is, if there is a window of opportunity, you say that that's a dubious proposition, but many people would disagree with you. If there's a window of possibility to stop Iran acquiring this key military nuclear technology, do you not believe that politicians in the West, leave aside Israel, are in the end bound to do what they can to stop it?
No, because you are basing that argument on that Iran is suicidal and would actually, let's say they are building a bomb, let's say make a small one. You are assuming that Iran is suicidal and will attack Israel. I don't accept that assumption.
So you are saying, in the end, the world has to live with an Iran that has a nuclear weapon.
Why?
Actually, it doesn't really change very much.
Why not? They act as a rational power. What we can't do is go into a preemptive war against another Middle Eastern country based on bad intelligence, and the intelligence is bad.
So you suggested to me from the very beginning that America is having to change its mind on Iran, but nobody has changed its mind to say what you've just said to me. George Bush, of course, wouldn't say it in a million years. Even Barack Obama who actually supports the idea of direct engagement with the Iranian regime. He says he will do whatever it takes to protect the security of allies, most particularly Israel. So nobody in America is using the language you're using.
Well, you know, you're touching on a sensitive subject, but the debate on Iran has been driven by Israel, which believes it's under existential threat. There is very little independent...
It believes that because the president of Iran has pretty much said the very same thing.
He's not in power. The man is probably crazy. He's not only crazy, he's probably bipolar. He does not have his finger on the nuclear trigger. There's a Politburo, an informal Politburo in Iran, which runs the country, and that Politburo is very dubious of Ahmadinejad.
Do you think that that's much consolation to Israelis living in Tel Aviv when you tell me that they shouldn't take account of the threats coming from the president of Iran because he's a bipolar maniac? The very fact that Mr. Ahmadinejad is the president of Iran surely is reason for Israelis to worry about Iran acquiring the bomb.
Well, you know, Saddam used to threaten Israel to destroy Israel over and over again. The Arabs have. Why should
you? Well, Saddam didn't just threaten Israel. He sent Scud rockets into Israel.
That was in the middle of a war. I mean, it's different. I mean, there's rhetoric in the Middle East of good and evil, and then there's what people do. Iran today could start World War III in Lebanon. They could strap some chemical warheads on these rockets, fire them into Tel Aviv, and we would have World War III, but the Iranians do not.
You clearly believe that Iran, and it's a phrase you've used indeed in a forthcoming book, you're going to use it again, you believe Iran is the new superpower, don't you? But superpowers surely have to have a nuclear capability. If one looks at the trajectory of China or India, part of them becoming superpowers of one form or another was acquiring the bomb. Mm-hmm. If Iran is to be a superpower, it needs the bomb.
It probably needs the bomb, but what I'm saying is there's no evidence it's rushing for it, and there's no evidence it's going to use it. I mean, Israel has the bomb, but we trust the Israelis not to launch a preemptive war using a nuclear bomb.
And you, for many years, were a paid employee of the U.S. government, and you think...
I was not only paid employee, but two of my bosses were killed by the Iranians. I've had Iranians working for me that were assassinated in Dubai. I know what the Iranians are capable of. I know what the Iranians were capable of from 1979 to 1996. They did blow up Khobar barracks. They did attack the Israeli embassy in Argentina. And I can go on and on, but what we're looking at is the arc of a revolutionary power, irresponsible, irrational, ingrown hate. What has changed? The Iranians have grown up.
You have already said to me that you think Iran has won, and when you say they've won, I guess you regard Iraq as a very important part of their regional victory.
But we're already hearing pieces of Maliki, the prime minister, saying, let's get a timetable. You guys leave. Thank you. You've handed this government over to the Shia. All of the Shia parties, I know, I used to meet them all through the 90s. Every time these men showed up at meetings, they had Iranian minders from Iranian intelligence, from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the Ministry of Intelligence.
You therefore posit that Nouri al-Maliki, the Prime Minister, or let's say another important minister whom we just had on this program, Oil Minister Shahristani, they are nothing more than puppets, stooges of Iran.
The puppets is a little bit strong. What they are is they understand that the future of Iraq is closely tied to Iran. They cannot afford to alienate the Iranians. The Iranians have the ability to turn the table over. And if you're making a big decision and you're sitting even in the green zone, you have to go to Tehran and make a reference. This may change in 30 years, the old Persian-Arab divide, but I'm talking about now. You need refined fuel from Iran. The Iranians are key to Iraq's survival.
But Mr. Shahristani sat in that chair just a short while ago, and he assured me that Iraq had no intention of giving up 1 ounce of its sovereignty to the United States or indeed to Iran. He is pursuing policies, particularly when it comes to the oil fields, which he says are absolutely in the interests of and all about the people of Iraq.
I have no doubt about his platform here. But Iraq is going to have a relationship with Iran as we have with Canada.
Well, a relationship is one thing, but you're saying to me that, in effect, Iran is about to annex Iraq.
Well, what they've done is they've been quite clear, Shah Rouhani has as well, he's on the record of running the new pipeline from Basra is going to go through Iran. Iran is going to have a lot of influence over Iraq. When that pipeline that goes from Majnoon Field, 30 billion barrels, runs through Iran, the nature of the relationship has changed in history unlike we've ever seen in our lifetime.
Do you seriously believe that the United States government, having spent trillions of dollars and having lost more than 4,000 lives in Iraq, and knowing that Iraq's oil reserves arguably outstrip those of all other countries, possibly even Saudi Arabia, but certainly all other countries bar Saudi Arabia, you just think the Americans are going to walk away and leave Iran to do what it will?
I think they'll put up a fight, put up a containment, but Americans are less likely to occupy Iraq than the Iranians are at some point. Look, what we did when we went into Iraq, what held Iraq together is not a nation. Three different sects, three different communities, Kurds, Sunni Arabs, and Shia Arabs. We destroyed the glue that held that place together. American and British troops cannot serve as that glue. So we're either going to have to restore the Sunnis in power like Saddam Hussein, or we're going to have to give it to the Shia. There is no choice. Iraq will never come back together.
But when you say give it to the Shia, of course, Nouri al-Maliki is a Shia, but he isn't Iranian. And he would say he is Iraq's prime minister working for Iraq.
He has to say that.
You were there during the Iran-Iraq war. You know that just because an Iraqi is Shia does not mean that he sees a reason to be loyal to Tehran and not to Baghdad.
We've got to look at Lebanon. Hassan Nasrallah is as Arab as you get. And he is beholden to Tehran. He is a Lebanese nationalist. But he cannot move in Lebanon without consulting Tehran. He's an Arab.
Does it ever strike you that perhaps you are overestimating the strength of Iran?
I could be, but on the other hand, I've underestimated it for many years and suffered personally, and people around me have suffered. You have to follow Iran's arc. When it was a country in 1981, it was about ready to fall apart. 19 years later, it's won a war against Israel. How can we ignore this war against Israel? In May 2000, the Israelis left under fire, got nothing they wanted. 2006, an Israeli column was stopped. They got nothing they wanted. This is the first time that Israel has ever been defeated in the field of battle over a long period of time. This is huge in the Arab world. And if you're a Palestinian and you know the relationship between Iran and Hezbollah, who are you going to side with if you're worried about Israel? You're going to side with Iran. Who is the most popular leader in the Middle East? Hassan Nasrallah, a Shia. Who is the second most popular leader? Bashar al-Assad, a Shia. And the third one is Ahmadinejad. The whole balance in the Middle East between Sunni and Shia has changed.
No one would dispute that Iran has had success supporting proxies, guerrilla movements, particularly Hezbollah is a strong example in Lebanon. But look back home. If you are positing the idea that Iran is building an empire, is a superpower across the Middle East, how does that square with some basic facts? Unemployment in Iran, at least 20%, if one doesn't believe the official figure, which nobody does. Electricity in such short supply, they have four-hour blackouts already in Tehran. It may well get worse. We have a country which is rich in oil but can't even build refineries to give itself enough petrol to run its cars. This is a superpower?
It's a superpower in that they control energy corridors. You look at the agreement signed between Turkey and Iran for gas supplies, either crossing from Turkmenistan or directly from Iran. You look at the agreement signed just recently between Turkmenistan and Pakistan. If the Pakistanis don't want to live in the dark, they're going to have to deal with Iran. You look at the Iranian military and their Silkworm missiles. They can take out the Arab oil overnight. They're a military power. They're not an economic power. And the reason they're not doing economically well, partly at least, is because of the embargo.
You are an intelligence man through and through. That's your career. You saw the intelligence failures that led to the belief Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, the sort of inflating of Saddam Hussein as a threat when we now know he really wasn't. You are doing just the same thing.
I didn't say Iran's a threat. I'm just saying...
Well, you just talked about Iran's military strength. Let me just cite you some facts and figures from Anthony Cordesman, who written a long report on Iran's real military strength. He says two-thirds of their battle tanks are obsolete. They have fewer than 100 real usable warplanes. He says that most of their missile systems are obsolete. This is the reality of Iran today.
What does Cordesman know? I mean, where is he getting this?
Do you think that Iran has, with all of its hundreds and hundreds of tanks, a real effective fighting
Iraq
war
has
for a land war?
Iran could easily be defeated by the United States. Easily. We could do it in 4 or 5 days, take their airplanes out of the air. But it's their asymmetrical capabilities which make it different.
Which brings you back to Hezbollah, brings you back to the car bombs and the guerrilla warfare.
Guerrilla warfare. They hit an Israeli frigate.
But
they knocked it out.
Is that a reason to say, oh, we can't stop Iran acquiring nuclear weapons because they're a regional superpower? You're saying something entirely different now.
No, I'm not. What do we do about Iran? I'm asking you, what do we do about it? Do we bomb it and see if they take the oil facilities out? If they hit Abqaiq with one silkworm, if they hit Ras Tanur with another one, and they hit the North Field, I don't know about Britain, but the United States goes under economically. That is a projection of power. Americans cannot live with $12 for a gallon of gasoline. And the only reason Bush is backing down on Iran is this is ideological war he would love to fight but can't.
But it should be said, you told me that the Iranians are in no way suicidal. It would be suicidal for them to completely block oil supplies because they would be killing their own economy.
They respond to an attack. They will not start it. They will respond to an attack.
But let's come
it's
back.
A deterrent.
I understand what you're saying, but let's come back then to your analysis of U.S. strategy. You said they've come to realize they can't just lob missiles toward Iran. Perhaps something more subtle is going on. Perhaps they have learned some lessons from Iraq, and perhaps now the Bush administration is sending signals that the squeeze on Iran will be diplomatic. And you said, well, what could you do? Sanctions is a very clear example, and Total, the leading French oil firm, through the use of soft political power, has just withdrawn from a massive contract it could have won to develop Iran's natural gas field.
It's South Pars, but embargoes at the end of the day don't work. I mean, the American government has come out and said, yes, we have an embargo, but we're not quite sure of the effect. But with oil at $135, $140, Iran can buy most of the stuff on the black market. And it will suffer.
We look at its economy. Its economy is tottering. It is staggering. And one large reason is because it is economically isolated.
It hasn't stopped them to date. This embargo has been on for 30 years. The Iranians truly believe that they are a superior people to the Arabs in particular and to us. They believe in empire, and it cuts across the board, liberals, conservative, religious parties. They believe they have a destiny. Now, what that means is they're willing to suffer economically for an indeterminable time. This will go on and on and on. But in the meantime, you just cannot ignore the Iranians. Why, in God's name, are we not talking to them to figure out what they want?
Well, that brings me to, and we're running short of time, brings me to the real question for you. You're not in U.S. government anymore, but if you were, and you were commissioned to write a paper to be given to the president on what to do now about Iran, what would you say?
I'd take James Baker, a negotiator knows what he's doing. I'd send to Tehran and say, what do you want? And once we determined what they wanted, we would set up a step-by-step diplomacy. We did the same thing with China in 71 with Nixon, which, by the way, the economy couldn't have been worse after the Cultural Revolution.
And you tell me what they want is de facto control of Iraq. They want de facto control of the oil supplies coming out of the Gulf.
They want the security control of Iraq just like we want Canada and Mexico. We will not tolerate a foreign power being in Mexico or Canada. We don't control the country by proxies. It's our sphere of influence.
And
they want Iraq and Afghanistan in their sphere of influence.
And what even you believe they want in the long run is the security they believe will come with a nuclear weapon. And you would say, Mr. President, we have to accept it.
Yes. Who's more rational? The Sunni in Saudi Arabia who attacked the United States on 9/11, we still don't have the answers, or the Iranians who have not been involved in terrorism since 1996?
And do you think either President Obama or President McCain would give your advice the time of day?
No. They're part of the system. We're talking about an entrenched journalistic core, and it's too much of a 180-degree turn. But I base this on 30 years of having lived on the periphery, suffered from the Iranians, and watched this arc, which I hope continues. It may not continue. We may be at war with Iraq. With Iran in the next 6 months. But if the arc continues, we can eventually make a deal with Iran.
With a nuclear Iran?
Why not?
It's a gamble which most people in the Western world are simply not prepared to take.
How much do we know about Iran? We don't even talk to Iran. What have the Iranians done to us? They are keeping the peace in Iraq. The American State Department has said, thanks to the Iranians, they are quieting down the Shia. David Satterfield, who's in charge of Iraq, said this in a public statement to the Washington Post. This is coming from Bob Baer.
Final thought. You have said time and again that part of the reason that America has failed in Iraq and failed in the Middle East is because we don't understand. As an ex-intelligence guy who looks at the system now, is America any closer to understanding?
No, we're getting a bit isolated. We're in Iraq. We're living in the green zone. We don't really know what's happening in Iraq except, you know, through our troops on the ground. That's not the best intelligence source. The more the conflict continues in the Middle East, the more we withdraw into our crusader castles. And I think we should take Iran and do just the opposite and come out of our castles and go there.
Robert Baer, thank you very much for being on Hard Talk.
Thanks.